Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, cultural enrichment, and all-inclusive fares. Discover more at Viking.com.
From the opinion pages of the Wall Street Journal, this is Potomac Watch.
President Biden pledges that the U.S. will donate 500 million Pfizer vaccines to lower-income countries as two new reports shed light on the protests in Lafayette Park last summer, as well as the January 6th Capitol riot. Welcome, I'm Kyle Peterson with the Wall Street Journal. We're joined today by my colleagues, WSJ columnist Bill McGurn and editorial writer Jason Willick. Speaking at the G7 summit on Thursday, President Biden said this, quote, "The United States will purchase a half a billion doses of Pfizer COVID-19 vaccine to donate to nearly 100 nations that are in dire need in the fight against this pandemic. That's a historic step, the largest single purchase and donation of COVID-19 vaccines by any single country ever," unquote. He said these vaccines will start being shipped in August as quickly as they can be manufactured. 200 million of the doses to be delivered this year, with another 300 million in the first half of 2022. Bill, what do you make of this as a foreign policy initiative, an exercise in soft power?
I think it's great. I'm glad the Biden administration is doing this. Look at the position we're in now, just as opposed to a few months from now, that we're now in the position to donate these extra vaccines. I think it also shows, as our editorial points out, that we can help the world with their vaccinations without having to suspend intellectual property rights and so forth, some of the more dubious ways that they want to do it. So I think there are a few questions you could ask about the distribution and how we're going to choose, but it's a great move. It speaks to the best of America, and we can do it, and it's a great thing for the world.
Just to provide an update on those vaccination thresholds in the United States, population over 65, according to the CDC tracker, 86.5% of those people, those that are the most at risk, have gotten at least one dose of the vaccine. Population 12 years and older, it's 61.5%. Those are some pretty high numbers. And the federal government has been buying these Pfizer vaccines at cost, now is talking about giving some away abroad. And Jason, it's interesting because China has been also trying to play the soft power game with its Sinopharm vaccine. But what's unfortunate is that that one doesn't seem to be highly effective. There was an interesting report last week in the Washington Post specifically about Bahrain. And it said that Bahrain is almost 50% vaccinated, and yet the government recently put in place a two-week lockdown, and high-risk people who have already gotten two doses of the Sinopharm vaccine are now being given the Pfizer version.
Yeah, I think, well, first of all, we're donating 500 million vaccines, and I think the cost is about $3.5 billion. That's so cheap. I mean, that's $7 a vaccine. We're talking in Washington about such enormous numbers, even for foreign aid. And now we're talking about, vaccinating 10% of the world at, less than the cost of a lunch in Washington. So that's remarkable. And with regard to China, I think that's absolutely right. I mean, they don't have the same level of rigor in their testing that Pfizer and Moderna had to go through. So there's been some ambiguity as to how effective is this shot? I've seen some conflicting studies. Some are showing that in terms of severe effects, once you've had two doses of the Chinese shot, it is effective at suppressing, deaths and hospitalizations, but you still have the disease, circulating at a perhaps a less severe level of disease, whereas these mRNA vaccines seem to really just shut the thing down. So, it is quite a competition and a show of, we talk about the United States and China competing on semiconductors, competing on weapons, competing on space travel. Here we're competing, in a much smaller level, the molecular level of viruses and mRNA and vaccines. And it seems that our biotech sector was sufficiently advanced, that the vaccine that is coming out of Pfizer and Moderna is more effective, and that's going to have a political repercussions as, you know, nations look at which model is more worthy of being followed, the American or the Chinese.
Biden said that he's doing this, he's making this move to save lives and end the pandemic with no strings attached, no expectation of any of the countries that get the donated vaccines. But I thought it was interesting, he also made the argument, Bill, that this is in America's self-interest. And here's part of what he said, quote, "As long as the virus rages elsewhere, there is a risk of new mutations that could threaten our people. We know that raging COVID-19 in other countries holds back global growth, raises instability, and weakens governments," unquote. And I mean, there's some truth to the idea, Bill, that the U.S. recovery is somewhat dependent on recovery in other countries, just the way that trade flows and supply chains interact.
That, yes, and that's true for every country, of course. Look, it speaks to the best of America that we don't attach the strings. China is certainly attaching strings. I think some countries that have relations with Taiwan, it's kind of hinted to them that they may not get the Chinese vaccines unless they cut relations with Taiwan. We don't want to do that. I think it is in our interest to be generous in this regard. First of all, the world wants or would prefer the American vaccine. And as you say, being over there helps us keep better track of the virus and so forth. So we do have an interest in it. If ours are more effective and can help deal with the pandemic in a more efficient way, we certainly have an interest in that. And I think we have an interest in just the goodwill. Here's what America, this is America. We, you know, a year ago, the world was enthralled to COVID-19, and we've come up. Not only have we come up with the vaccine, we've come up with ways to get it to the world after vaccinating quite a significant chunk of our own population. And as Jason points out, in terms of the cost, you know, if you look at all the trillion-dollar bills going through Congress right now, the bang for the buck on this and the goodwill for America. I don't think you can put a price on that.
And it's true that vaccinations are still continuing in the U.S. and with any luck, those trends will keep going for quite some time. But Jason, it does seem to me that we are reaching a point where there are going to be excess vaccines, where the cap is not the supply anymore, it's the demand. And you've seen all of these states set up lotteries and stuff like that to try to entice people to get vaccinated. Hopefully that keeps working. And it's true also that Pfizer is testing its vaccine in kids now. So if that gets approved, that will open up new demand. But at this point, it seems to me that the supply is greater than the number of arms that we can put it in.
That's true. And you talk about, you know, the pushing the vaccine further is going to be a culture war issue because it's going to be our employers requiring it, you know, our schools requiring it. I think we're at about more than half of the population, just over half, fully vaccinated. There's some debates among experts on immunity, you know, because probably some large percentage of the population also has natural immunity from having been infected with COVID. So what level of our population is immune to the virus? Well, you know, we don't exactly know, and we don't exactly know what herd immunity really is, but it's we're getting up there, and clearly our cases have plummeted. You know, we are turning the corner on the virus here in the United States. You saw Tommy Tuberville, the senator from Alabama, yesterday make a video, or one of these last few days, make a video encouraging his constituents to get vaccinated. You know, there started to be these political debates about who's not getting vaccinated, which political tribe do they belong to, and who should we be encouraging to get vaccinated? And it's true that we want to press ahead in the U.S. because if we get, you know, instead of 52% where we are now, if we get up to 75, we'll be, you know, safer from future mutations and safer from another round of lockdown and so on. But I think things are going pretty well in the United States, and if we could bring the rest of the world along, we'd all be better off.
Hang tight, we'll be right back. You're listening to Potomac Watch from the Wall Street Journal.
This message comes from Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, destination-focused dining, and cultural enrichment on board and on shore. And every Viking voyage is all-inclusive with no children and no casinos. Discover more at Viking.com.
From the opinion pages of the Wall Street Journal, this is Potomac Watch.
Welcome back. Jason makes an interesting point here, and I pulled up the daily CDC tracker of new cases, new COVID cases, and it is the lowest now. The moving average is the lowest now since, I think, March, it looks like, of 2020, which is basically when the pandemic started. So, Bill, I mean, it's true that the more vaccines go into arms, the safer we are from these variants and so on and so forth. And it's not clear yet exactly how long the immunity from the vaccine lasts. But just to double down on this point, it seems like there's going to be the demand is the issue here. And there's some element of culture war around that. But so far, the vaccines seem to have worked remarkably well and really, really just crushed the pandemic in the U.S.
Yeah, I agree. And it's look, as you say, with each additional person, you reduce the risk overall of the disease being transmitted to others. But once you get up into those numbers, and remember, a lot of people have natural immunities because they've had it. It's not new. This is what happens in pandemics. You know, people have it, then there's immune and it goes down. So I do think we're on the far side of the curve. I think people feel that. You know, you've seen some of the states lift the mandates and so forth. There's still some work to do on persuading some populations to get it. And where, as you say, there's going to be culture wars. You see already some of the universities are requiring it for their students. My daughter is going off to university that doesn't require a shot, but if you do not have one, you have to wear a mask while everyone else isn't. So, you know, there's a lot of pressure for people to people who haven't yet got their vaccination to get it.
Jason, do you agree with Bill that that the state of play here and also this Biden announcement of 500 million vaccines being donated weakens this argument that the Biden administration itself has made that the World Trade Organization should grant some sort of waiver for vaccine patents?
Absolutely. I mean, the idea was, you know, that this intellectual property protection for this technology, you know, is going to increase the price and lead to hoarding. And it's necessary to basically socialize that intellectual property for everyone to be able to afford it. But as we've said, this is an incredibly cheap purchase. I mean, we're buying it, you know, at $7 a pop. So, you know, I think Pfizer, I think the costs of vitiating the intellectual property are very high in terms of future innovation, and we are able to do it. We are able to spread the glory of the vaccine without doing that. Absolutely. And just one other note on the variants. I mean, India, I think we, you know, there's been sort of a scare around the variants for a long time. You know, could there be a new variant that sort of breaks through the vaccine? And I think, you know, that hasn't materialized yet, but we should, you know, be mindful that in India, whatever it was that was circulating around India, whatever variant of the virus does seem to be a little bit more infectious. So we have an interest in sort of quashing this as soon as possible, because the more the virus is circulating and adapting, you know, the more unpredictable it is and how it could change. So, you know, spending the money now is better than spending it later.
One other thought I would add on the patent waiver point is that this 500 million announcement is also only a piece of the puzzle here. So Pfizer's CEO was on hand when Biden made this announcement, and he also mentioned that his goal is to provide 2 billion doses of the vaccine to low and middle income countries over the next 18 months. So that's enough. If you need two doses for full vaccination, that's enough to fully vaccinate a billion people. And that's only Pfizer, before you even start looking at Moderna, AstraZeneca, J&J, and whichever other vaccines might get approval in the next year or so. And so the last that I saw, these World Trade Organization negotiations on the patent waiver could take months. And that's before any setup and manufacturing and testing of new supply chains comes through. And so, Bill, it also seems to me just that this patent waiver issue doesn't look like it's going to happen in time to make the real difference.
Right. I think what you're saying is that the situation has evolved, that it's almost moot now, right, with this new announcement. You know, I think it also speaks to, we can't forget the reason we're in the position to be generous and to donate these vaccines and to have them at a reasonable price is because we have a dynamic, innovated private sector. You know, there's a lot of people that imagine that all these efforts, it's all done by government. It's like a NASA effort. Look, government has a role. Government played a great role here in getting out of the way and clearing obstacles so that the private sector could act. And I think implicit in what you were saying, Kyle, is we need the private sector to continue to innovate, you know, to deal with whatever comes up, whether it's a new strain. We need a lot more research on, you know, how long the antibodies last and so forth. And so I think we should never forget this is only possible because of the kind of private sector we have. That's why America was first in this and not short shrifted and just sort of assume that government, you know, decreeing from Washington will know better and will be wiser about these questions.
Another piece of news this week involved one of the high-profile protests in the summer of 2020. Listeners probably remember the controversy around the clearing of Lafayette Park in Washington, D.C., which is next to the White House. And then after it was cleared, President Trump walked to St. John's Episcopal Church and took some photos of him there holding a Bible up. And there were a lot of allegations of what went on that day. But Jason, this week, the Inspector General of the Interior Department, which oversees the U.S. Park Police, issued essentially his report on his investigation. What were the takeaways there?
Right. This event, you know, was really a significant event over the summer, this June 1st police clearing of Lafayette Park. You sort of saw the media and Democrats use it to sort of portray the president and the administration as evil incarnate. I mean, these people, they would launch this gas attack on peaceful protesters for a vain, you know, photo op of from this, you know, this president who is not even sympathetic to the cause of the protesters. And, you know, this report just shows how exaggerated that was, because there was real violence at Lafayette Park. There was the St. John's Church, which is adjacent to the park, was set on fire. There was a treasury, a treasury building that was set on fire. There were 49 officers injured in the two nights before this. They had, you know, bricks and bottles thrown at them and so on. One was hospitalized. So there was real violence and arson happening. There were people, you know, reports of more of people with, you know, vests or perhaps more weapons, you know, around the park, which is right in front of the White House. So the park police, which controls DC's park, said, we want to put up a fence around this park. And the contractor who was going to install the fence, the fence that people couldn't climb over, they said, well, you have to, you know, secure our people, our workers, you have to put them in a safe position if they're going to install this fence. So the park police had this plan to do this based on the previous 2 days of violence. The inspector general says they were entitled to do that. They had the authority and discretion to do that, to protect federal property and to protect their officers. And they did, and they didn't know that President Trump was planning a visit when they started to plan to clear the park. So, you know, it turns out that this narrative was just so exaggerated for partisan effect. It's really remarkable when you read the report that just basically says this was a legitimate operation. And by the way, you know, after January 6th, we all recognize the importance of suppressing political violence, suppressing attacks on government buildings. And that's exactly what was happening here. And so it's really a remarkable embarrassment for the media.
One caveat I'm seeing in this debate is that this investigator's report only covers the actions of things under the purview of the Interior Department, so the U.S. Park Police. There is a mention in there about how at approximately 6:16 p.m., contrary to the operational plan and before the U.S. Park Police gave a final dispersal warning, the Secret Service came out. And so then there's definitely still some fog of war here. But to Jason's point, it does seem clear that the simple story in the media around this event was at least not entirely accurate, or not the whole story. And one thing that I think is important to point out is there were a lot of headlines talking about how Attorney General Bill Barr had personally come out and ordered the protesters removed. And I'll read a piece of the Interior Department report here. It says, the U.S. Park Police Operations Commander said the Attorney General asked him, are these people still going to be here when POTUS, meaning the President of the United States, comes out? The U.S. Park Police Operations Commander told us he had not known until then that the president would be coming out of the White House. And then it continues and says the U.S. Park Police Operations Commander denied that the Attorney General ordered him to clear Lafayette Park. So, Bill, I mean, it is, like I say, it seems to me that there's still a lot of fog of war here. But a lot of the headlines in retrospect from immediately after the event don't look quite accurate.
Right. I would go further than Jason. It was not just exaggerated. It was false. If you go back to the headlines, the stories in the Washington Post, the timeline, the idea was that Attorney General Bill Barr personally ordered the police to come out, remove these demonstrators and gas them. And now we find out that's just not true, that he didn't do that. And he was presented in terms that would have led you to believe he was a Gestapo chief somewhere. You know, when this happened, remember the context is after George Floyd was killed at the hands of police, Memorial Day weekend and so forth. That was the violence before. There were violence, as you said, at the square. The church was set on fire. That's why they were trying to secure the place and put up that fencing. And it was all put on Attorney General Barr, completely falsely. There's no evidence that he had anything to do with this. And yet there's been no apologies for that. That was a big, big thing. If you remember at the time, a group of parents from the Catholic school that his daughters attended wrote an open letter, you know, castigating Mr. Barr for this stuff. And they just didn't have a leg to stand on. So it is kind of a, you know, coincidence, like you're talking about the fog. It is, you can see how people might be led to assume this, that the Attorney General led this because Donald Trump appeared at the same time the Park Police were clearing the area for the contractor. But people jump to a lot of conclusions. They use that to smear the Attorney General and the president, for that matter, who didn't do this. You know, the idea this was all done by the Trump administration so that the president could get his little photo op. And there's no evidence for it at all. And someone maybe should say they're sorry.
And then one final point here. The result of that, it seems, was that people in the DC National Guard, in the Pentagon, took the lesson that they had to treat protesters with kid gloves. And it was interesting. There's another report out from two Senate committees this week on the January 6th Capitol riot. And Jason, part of the message there was that they were worried about optics. They were worried about having National Guard barricade around the Capitol. And the result was a slower response than they might have otherwise had, had it not been for these events in the summer of 2020.
Yeah, I think, look, you saw an attitude toward political violence completely, you know, change. I mean, when these people sympathized with these protesters at Lafayette Park because of their cause. But the fact is, many of them were violent and in front of the White House, assaulting police on a large scale, lighting things on fire, lighting government property on fire. That's unacceptable. And many of those same people thought realized that was unacceptable when it was, pro-Trump rioters attacking and vandalizing the Capitol. And, but, you know, this was a crazy year and there was a political frenzy. And I do think one of the things that comes out of the report, the Senate report, was basically that the military was a little bit frozen here because the Capitol Police were saying, we need help. They've breached the Capitol. We need help. And the Capitol Police were, and the National Guard were feeling, you know, we got criticized a lot last time, you know, in the days after Lafayette Park, we flew helicopters and so on and made a big showing on the National Mall. Do we really want to do that? Also, you know, the president is talking about overturning an election. Do we really want to put troops on the ground at the Capitol where they're certifying the election? So they were very concerned, and understandably so, frankly, you know, in the, you know, our hindsight is 2020, you know, saying what they should have done. But they, in retrospect, it seems like they were too concerned with the politics. And that did lead to some foot dragging when it would have been helpful to have the National Guard go out right away.
And I'll just read to underline that a quote from the report. It says DOD officials, Department of Defense officials cited lessons learned from the summer 2020 as guiding its decision making for January 6th. DOD officials believed it needed control measures and rigor before deploying DC National Guard personnel, including a clear deployment plan to avoid the appearance of over-militarization. There are other quotes, Bill, in the report about people saying concern about optics, how this looks with boots on the grounds of the Capitol. What do you make of that in retrospect?
Yeah, well, I think what you said before, look, this was a messy situation. One reason for the confusion is two events were going on. The president was walking over and they were installing the fence. So it was very messy that way. I think the report also says the communications were bad, right? That's one thing. But I do believe that the point the larger point you're making, this affected how they responded later on January 6th. And it all turns out to be done on basis of misimpressions and so forth. And so we've paid a high price for that. And again, it's one of those things, you know, the way it was reported, if you go back, the way it was reported was as dead certainty and so forth. There was no nuance in the reporting about this. And Bill Barr was, you know, drawn with devil's horns for doing this, like intentionally trying to gas people. And I think we should learn a little modesty from it, but I doubt we will.
Thank you, Bill and Jason. Thank you all for listening. We'll be back next week with another edition of Potomac Watch.
This message comes from Viking, committed to exploring the world in comfort. Journey through the heart of Europe on an elegant Viking longship with thoughtful service, destination-focused dining, and cultural enrichment on board and on shore. And every Viking voyage is all-inclusive with no children and no casinos. Discover more at Viking.com.